Hi, I'm Jessica Steinberg.
And I'm Amanda Borchel Dunn. Welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East,
and the Jewish world. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Daily Briefing. Today is Thursday, August 4th. Amanda Borchel Dunn here, joined by our military correspondent, Emmanuel Fabian, and news editor, Amy Spiro. Hello to you both.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Lots to cover today, as usual. We will discuss the continued road closure surrounding Gaza following Monday's arrest of Bassem Saidi, who leads Islamic Jihad in the West Bank. We'll also talk about an argument between Defense Minister Benny Gantz and Public Security Minister Omer Bar-Lev over women serving as prison guards. And we'll speak with Amy about Holocaust humor. Manny, let's start with you. The roads around Gaza have been closed since the arrest of Bassem Saidi, who leads Islamic Jihad in the West Bank, basically in fear of a retaliatory attack. First of all, remind our listeners what the Islamic Jihad group is.
Hi, so Islamic Jihad is the second largest terror group in the Gaza Strip, second to Hamas, that is that rule the Strip, estimated between 8,000 to 10,000 members or so. So less than Hamas, but they do carry similar capabilities. They also have rockets and other abilities to attack Israel with. And in the past, they have fought rounds of fighting with Israel alone without Hamas. So that's just a bit of context. So they also have quite a significant membership and operations in the West Bank as well. So on Monday night, Israeli forces arrested Bassem Saidi, who's the leader of the group in the West Bank. And according to the Shin Bet, he had recently been involved in building up the group there and attempting to expand its operations against Israel's operations in the West Bank. And following his arrest, the group in Gaza said it was raising its level of alert and threatened basically to take revenge against this arrest. Israel has attempted to kind of calm the situation. The security forces leaked pictures of Saidi in the interrogation room, seeming to show him looking okay and smiling a bit. But the tensions are still very, very high. So since Tuesday morning, the roads around the Gaza Strip have been closed. The reason for that is there are certain areas along the Gaza Strip which are under a kind of an imminent threat of a sniper attack or an anti-tank guided missile attack. The group has launched in the past anti-tank guided missiles at both army vehicles and civilian cars or at buses. So there's several roads along the strip which are basically exposed to these threats. So right now there's indications that Islamic Jihad is planning some sort of attack like that. At the same time, also the Zikim Beach, which is on the northern Gaza coast, is closed, as is the train line in the area, because there's a certain spot where the train is visible to the Gaza Strip. It goes over a bit of a hill. So that's the current threats going on there. Right now, Israel is really on the third day of just waiting for something to happen. There are these mediation efforts going on between Egypt, you know, indirect between Egypt and the Islamic Jihad in Israel, to try and get Islamic Jihad to back down from its attempt. But as far as reports go now, Israel is refusing the Islamic Jihad demands, and Islamic Jihad is vowing still to take action.
Okay, we'll definitely follow up on this. Manny, you also have an update on an issue we've been following here on the podcast a lot, the threat of Hezbollah in the north in regards to ongoing negotiations for a fixed maritime border with Lebanon. What's happening here?
So during a security cabinet meeting yesterday, which mostly discussed the Gaza situation, ministers there also received an update from security officials on what's going on with the maritime negotiations. Hezbollah has threatened in recent weeks to attack this gas field, which sits it's near the disputed area. Lebanon claims it's in the disputed area. Israel says it's not in the disputed area. But regardless, ministers were reportedly told that if no agreement is reached, then Israel and Hezbollah are likely to engage in a clash to last several days over this gas field, because of all the threats that Hezbollah has been ramping up. And there isn't any reported progress yet, but in Lebanon, they said that Israeli proposals were positive, and Israel seems mostly positive about it, but at the same time warning that if no deal is reached, then Israel's likely to see some sort of escalation in the north as well.
Okay, stay tuned on this too. Listeners, you remember about 6 months ago in which there were broad allegations published in the Israeli newspaper Kalkalist against Israeli police using NSO spyware to hack into phones of dozens of private Israeli citizens. So Amy has an update on that.
Yeah, so this week, the Justice Ministry released a report that they'd essentially been working on for 6 months about the allegations. And the bottom line of what they found was that, yes, the police are using what they call a sort of muted form of Pegasus, a lower form called Siphon. And they've been using that in its investigations. But what they directly negated what Kalkalist claimed was this report essentially found that the police were not using this without a warrant. They were only using this in cases where they'd gone to judge and gotten a warrant, and it was being used against people who were in an ongoing investigation. And Kalkalist had claimed that this was being used against politicians and activists and heads of ministries and family members of politicians and all this stuff. And this report found that no evidence of that happening. But it is important to note that the report did find things that the police were doing that were not legal. So despite the fact that police were getting warrants for these instances of phone tapping, they were gathering information that exceeded the limits of the warrant. So they were gathering information from dates that were not covered in the warrant. And they were also gathering information that was located on the phone itself, and the warrant only covered information that was communicated between two phones or between two computers or anything like that. So those are very serious allegations. Police are essentially breaking the law if they're gathering information that they're not privy to. But it was almost overshadowed by the fact that Kalkalist had made these huge explosive claims that really like set the media discussion for weeks, a month, if not more. And, you know, most of that was found to be disproved.
Okay, thank you, Amy, for that. We are going to a short break now.
I got married this Monday in the middle of a war.
You are not a soldier anymore. You are 50 years old. What is the matter with you?
It's like a couple of kilometers from here. Like, my friend has a 4x4. Let's just go cut across the fields and go get him.
Israel Stories, Wartime Diaries. Voices that try to capture slivers of life right now.
And he told me, take with you a sleeping bag and a tent and just go.
I texted him on, like, after I was told that he was killed.
From their eyes, I was a traitor.
Everybody needs their, like, blankie, their teddy bear, something to make them feel safe.
I'm just another grandfather looking after his grandchild while his son is off at war.
These children of Hamas now will be the killer of my children.
I desperately wanted to talk about sex during my eulogy for Ido.
Everyone has to choose to be optimistic because we don't have room for pessimism.
Check out Israel Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, Daily Briefing listeners. I'm so happy you've joined us for our daily analysis of what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world. Like what you hear? Check out our Times Will Tell weekly podcast. Every Friday, you can hear conversations with authors, artists, archaeologists, and thought leaders from around the globe. Subscribe to Times Will Tell, our weekly half-hour feature, wherever you find your podcasts. Enjoy! And we're back. Manny, back with you. A probe was recently opened following new allegations of female soldiers and prison officers being sexually harassed and assaulted in Israeli prisons by Palestinian security prisoners. And while both Defense Minister Benny Gantz and Public Security Minister Omer Bar-Lev agree that the described acts are horrific, Bar-Lev is refusing to halt the use of female soldiers. On what grounds here, Manny?
So just for a bit of context, in 2005, an amendment was made to Israel's conscription draft laws to allow this kind of excess of soldiers to be drafted into the prison service instead of, and also the police, instead of going to the IDF. Now, because of this, basically a lot of soldiers end up serving in the prison service, and then these allegations, which began in around 2017, 2018, that Palestinian security inmates were harassing or even raping in at least one case these young soldiers who are serving in the prisons. Now, Gantz, as he's the defense minister, he's in charge of the army. He said that he will not renew this amendment to the law, which must be renewed every year. It expires in December. So he's saying that he will not allow soldiers to continue serving in the prison service until these rape allegations and sexual harassment allegations are fully investigated. Barilev, on the other hand, is, well, I mean, he doesn't have much of a choice. If Gantz doesn't renew it, then Gantz doesn't renew it. But for now, he's refusing to Gantz's demand to not allow these soldiers to serve in the wings where Palestinian security prisoners are kept. For one key reason is because the 2005 agreement says that soldiers serving in the prison service only conduct their service in the wings of security prisoners. They don't, they're not involved in criminal, wings where, or other people are kept. Their service in the prison service is only in the wings where Palestinian, security prisoners are kept. So Barilev, for that reason, can't just, you know, say sorry to all the soldiers who are serving there and tell them to go home until they figure out what's going on. But at the same time, in 4 or 5 months' time, we may see that this agreement ends, and then there won't be any new soldiers being drafted into the prison service until they figure out what's going on with the allegations, which are taking a very, very long time to be investigated.
Okay, thank you, Manny, for that. Amy, your unabashed love for reality TV has brought us another really fascinating look at Israeli society. This time, we're talking about double standards over the use of Holocaust humor. A contestant on Ha'ach HaGadol, Israel's Big Brother, recently said Hail Hitler and gave a Nazi salute. Is this one of those cases in which it's only okay for Jews to joke about the Holocaust?
Yeah, so I think that's one of the defenses of the fact that essentially, right, these contestants on Big Brother, which, just to defend my own name, I don't watch as a rule, despite my love for reality TV. But these contestants were essentially given a slap on the wrist, right, for this behavior, which was sort of really shocking to see, especially, you know, on the TV screen, when, you know, very similar instances in other countries resulted in them being kicked out of the house. And I think, right, I think that we have this gut reaction to say, okay, well, Jews can make fun of the Holocaust and non-Jews can't, and that's just the rule. But I think if you say that, then it just sends you down, you know, so many other paths. And you say, okay, well, can only Ashkenazi Jews make jokes about the Holocaust? Can only Jews whose grandparents were, you know, in the camps make fun of the Holocaust? And where are you going to draw that line? And I think also the element of, was this humor, right? Like, it seems like one of the contestants gave the salute, right? Because his girlfriend in the house was waxing her upper lip, and he thought that was funny. It didn't come across as that way on screen. It wasn't really clear. And you have this sort of like, okay, well, if you're going to have Holocaust humor, right, it really needs to be funny. And this is sort of like this just bizarre on screen salute with not a lot of context. But I think it also, it comes down to so many other things and so many other ways that we reference the Holocaust, right? And it comes up outside of the bounds of humor, right? You know, in the start of the COVID pandemic, when there were so many, you know, rallies and everything around the world, and people were comparing, right? All the time we heard people comparing COVID restrictions to Nazi Germany. And Israel did complain a lot about those kind of comparisons, and major Jewish groups made a lot of complaints. But there were also people in Israel doing that. And when people in Israel do that, it's sort of like, well, how do we react now? How can we react to that in a different way? And then politicians, I mean, I wish it weren't the case, but on the right and the left, you have people calling their political enemies Nazis. Like, that happens here. And so if that's happening overseas, that's something that we would be offended by and upset about. When it happens here, it's brushed aside in a different way, I think.
Of course, humor is used in many situations when people feel uncomfortable with the subject or that the subject is foreign to them. But here in Israel, I agree with you. If you have 6 degrees to Kevin Bacon, it's about 1 degree to the Holocaust in terms of cultural reference points. Now, what did the program do in light of these instances of the Nazi salute, which was twice, is that correct, on the program in a couple of days?
Yeah, inexplicably, there were two contestants on the current season who gave this salute on camera in the house over the past week. The show in a statement said, okay, we weren't sure what to do. We held a lot of discussions and we decided that instead of kicking them out, and I think it's important to note that a lot of people, not this season so far, but past seasons, you know, the show has kicked people out for breaking the rules, for abusive behavior, for violence, for verbal altercation. So there's precedent for saying you broke the rules, you did something inappropriate, you need to leave. In this case, the show said, we don't think that's the best route. We want to address it in the house. And so they basically convened a discussion of everyone in the house, and they brought in this woman, Orna Ben-Dor, whose parents are Holocaust survivors. And she's a filmmaker, and she's made a lot of documentary films about second-generation Holocaust survivors and memory, and they held this 15-minute discussion to talk about it. And there were obviously people who thought that was the right decision, and then people who thought that the show was really just keeping them on because they get a lot of ratings. You know, one of them is a very controversial sort of villainous figure, and kicking him out, people felt the show was sort of just letting him stay because he brought in numbers.
While we're speaking, I was thinking about a conversation I had with the stand-up comedian Jonathan Barak a couple of years ago, and I just want to read out a quote that he told me at that time. He said, the first rule of comedy is that comedy is tragedy plus time, but for Jews, time is irrelevant. That's why Jews can make fun of tragedies as they occur. Because we have been suffering for 5,000 years, no joke is too soon or too late. We can make jokes about being slaves in Egypt, and we can still make jokes about the Holocaust, and we can still make jokes about the coronavirus. Would you agree with that, Amy?
Yes and no. Listen, I'm obviously not here to be some sort of arbiter of humor, of acceptable boundaries, right? I don't think there's one answer to this discussion. And also, like, you know, in writing my comment, it was intended more as a conversation starter than a conversation finisher. I'm not the person who's coming to say, this is right and this is wrong. Yes, I've never been one who said, okay, well, that's, you know, you can't make jokes. And I referenced in the article this great documentary from 2016 with Mel Brooks and with a lot of other comedians called The Last Laugh about this, right? Can you joke about the Holocaust? And pretty much all the comedians said yes, and I completely understand that. So I'm absolutely not here to say that you can't make jokes or make comments, but I think when things cross the line, like, there should be some sort of reaction. Also, like, some of the things I reference in the article, like jokes that have been on mainstream, you know, Israeli TV shows, like, people have been offended. Holocaust survivors have been offended, right? And that's not an invalid position. That doesn't mean you can never say anything. But the fact is, there aren't a lot of Holocaust survivors left in the world, but they're still there and they're still watching TV and they're still seeing the things you say. And I think there is an element of responsibility. And I think also, like, listen, we live in a global world, right? We're no longer in this situation where you can say, okay, a joke on Israeli TV is only going to reach Israelis. It's not. It's just not. We live around the world. These things have global pickup, right? I referenced this infamous 2015 video in the prime minister's residence where Sarah Netanyahu and this interior designer are walking around. And it became very infamous in Israel because everything Sarah Netanyahu does is always up for debate, right? And there was this throwaway line where he references some joke about Anne Frank hiding behind one of the closets. And no one in Israel paid any attention. And then 3 years later, that clip ended up on John Oliver's HBO show, and he was mind blown that there was an Anne Frank joke put out by the, you know, prime minister, and no one sort of thought twice, right? So I think that's sort of the perfect example of these things have global reach, right? And if you go and you watch this show and you say, okay, well, the Israelis, like, think it's okay to make Holocaust jokes, then what does that say? And I think it's just, as I said, a conversation starter.
Definitely much food for thought. Amy, Manny, thank you for joining me. Listeners, please join us again next week for more Daily Briefing. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. And thanks to our producer, Gilad Brownstein, and to Gili Amar for this out-of-this-world music.
You can find us daily wherever you find your podcasts.
And on our mothership, timesofisrael.com. Like what you hear? Consider rating us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to spread the word.
And be sure to check out our weekly feature, Times Will Tell, released every Friday. Until next time,
Shalom.